Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 26 says, "And you shall be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and have separated you from the peoples, that you should be mine." If the people of God wished to maintain their relationship with Yahweh and enter the promised land, holiness was expected. A true covenant worshiper would desire a close relationship with God, always seeking reconciliation amidst impurity, moving away from death toward life-giving holiness. Though we're no longer bound by the old covenant today, holiness is still very much an unchanging characteristic of God, as we noticed yesterday, and a clear-cut expectation if we are to be his people. Under the new covenant, 1 Peter 1:14 through 16 gives us that same thing as it testifies, "Be holy, for I am holy." Walking out holiness in this life is a difficult task, but it is required if we are to be on the straight and narrow, and we recognize the authority of the scriptures as stated in 2 Timothy 3:16, and sometimes God's word may convict us to change. But you know what helps us get through that challenge of growing into holiness and into spiritual maturity? Our love for God. As Jesus said in John 14 and verse 15, "If you love me, keep my commandments." If we truly love the Lord and place him on the throne of our hearts as the number one priority in our lives, every step, every choice along the way will be guided by our understanding of his word. I want to apply this principle today in holy relationships that we share with others. And I want to start by looking at Ezra chapter 9. In the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, we find the children of Israel being led out of captivity. Their journey back to the Holy Land after their time in exile was filled with a realization of just how greatly they'd abandoned their loyalty toward God, and thus there was a great need for some preaching on boundaries. A big social problem is referenced in these books, and that is of intermarriage by the Jews, God's people, and foreign nations. The men of Israel were choosing wives from outside nations, and thereby they were corrupting the holy nation which God had established. This is a direct violation of Deuteronomy 7, verses 3 through 6, where God said the reason they were not to do this was because those people would turn away them from following after God to serve other gods. When Ezra discovers that the children of Israel have not separated themselves unto holiness as God commanded, we find in Ezra 9 that he tears his garment and he plucks out his hair and he falls to the ground because he is simply appalled at their decision to rebel in this matter. And this leads him to a passionate prayer. And I encourage you to read Ezra 9 on your own. Verse 6 says, "Oh my God, I am too ashamed and humiliated to lift up my face to you, my God, for our iniquities have risen higher than our heads, and our guilt has grown up to the heavens." The seriousness of God's demand for holiness and unity among his people was not lost on Ezra. And because of his example, the people turned away from their sinful relationships immediately. We find in Ezra 10 that a great assembly gathered there and they confessed their sin and they were willing to put away the unlawful wives and the children that they found in their exile. In keeping themselves holy in their social relationships and physically set apart, God's people would be able to put up a spiritual boundary that would uphold them from the idolatry and paganism of neighboring nations. You know, marriage is just as sacred today as it was when God created it all the way back in the garden account. The principle of holiness that must exist within our relationships is exposited further in the New Testament in many places. We've already noticed one today in 2 Corinthians 6 and 14, where Paul says, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? The two do not exist together for spiritual growth." Paul goes on to reference in verse 17, Isaiah 52, where he says, "Come out from them and be separate." This idea of being yoked can be used many ways as far as holy living is concerned. But it's clear for us today that there is to be a distinction in the boundaries that we hold with the world and with our relationship to it, because we have a higher calling. And so in closing, I ask you, in light of the scriptures that we've just viewed, and in your inherent knowledge of the importance of a Christ-centered relationship. How do you think God views marriage outside the church today, with a believer and an unbeliever? If you are dating with the intention of marriage, which I would hope that that is our intention when we begin to seriously date, what is it that you are looking for in a spouse? You got to know that. What are you looking for? And is that consistent with your journey as a Christian toward eternity and toward dedicating your life to Christ? I want to encourage us all, both young and old, to seek God's wisdom in this matter. We have lost, and we are continuing to lose, young souls who seek an intimate relationship with unbelievers, who do not also share an intimate relationship with the Lord, and they leave the Lord in pursuit of that earthly love. I implore you today to pursue a holy relationship that will bring you, both of you, closer in your faith toward God, so that if you're blessed with marriage one day, you may both say with confidence, as Joshua said in the days gone by, that as for me and for my house, we will serve the Lord.